B-Pod Studios.
Farsetta in the morning. The Fanatic.
Welcome back, everybody. Before we get Bob Cooney to finish his thought, now, earlier in the day, we gave away a Tobias Harris autographed basketball. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to give away a Ben Simmons autographed mini basketball. Whew. How's that grab you? Huh?
It grabs me.
All right, now all you got to do, now you were the seventh caller last time, because it's 7-6-8, we're going with the sixth caller this time. All you got to do is be the sixth caller to 215-263-0975. That's 215-263-0975. Be the sixth caller to that line. You'll win yourself a fine Ben Simmons autographed mini basketball. Now in studio,
get excited.
Now in studio with us right now is the great D Lineham joining us right now, straight up at 9 o'clock. What's up, D?
Good morning, everyone.
It's great to have you in. Now before the break, Bob gave us a little teaser here. Bob, just for the teaser.
I heard you said he was going to finish a thought. Is this a first in his life?
I tell you, I wouldn't have finished it unless Mark reminded me.
Bob's like, what happened? I did that?
I know. I'm like, oh, shoot, get me nice.
So we had started talking about Joel Embiid and the injury issues that he's had in years past, and you had your own theory on this, Bob.
Yeah, I thought of this before, like, and D was there, you know, during the time when he was coming up also. Joel Embiid, when he played in college, was like 6'10 and I don't know, 220, okay? He gets the foot injuries. His body continues to grow. He doesn't play for two seasons. He comes back as a player as a 7'2", 260-pounder. So if you watched a lot of him, and somebody made a video of him later on after we had talked about it, but when you watched him go up for a layup, for a dunk, he didn't land well. And my reasoning was, my thought was, you grow 4 inches and then jump at a 10-foot basket all the time, and now you're learning how to land again because you're landing with a totally different body. I think that might have lent to some of his knee injury that he had, that he had the meniscus and all that stuff. I just think some of his injuries came about early on in his career because he was playing, Crystal mentioned, he hasn't played a lot to begin with,
sure,
but then he was playing with a totally different body. Not a body he grew into, but a body he was given that was totally different and saying, go out and play some more in a sport that he really wasn't familiar with. So I think that's why I think maybe his injuries will slow down now that he's used to the body that he has.
Growing into his body.
Yeah, he didn't have a chance to do it. He was basically given another body and saying, here, go out and play.
Okay.
A lot of more pounds and 4 more inches. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's different.
I would agree.
There was actually an interesting report a while ago, and this was an ESPN report on why in the world does Joel Embiid fall down so much. And apparently it was per doctor's orders because it would lessen the hit to other parts of his body if he just learned how to fall down to almost lessen the impact, even though we think that would heighten the impact.
Take a flop.
Exactly.
I don't mind.
You could get Thaddeus Young to teach him because he was on the floor all the time.
hey, I was on the floor a lot too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But D, it is 7-6 day today, which is why we're talking all things 76ers. I'm going to throw to you our first two Twitter polls that we threw out today.
Okay.
And they're the most common things debated amongst all Sixers fans, right? One is Ben Simmons' jump shot, the severity of it. Do you think Ben Simmons' jump shot status, do we make too much of his jump shot status? The two answers we gave are stop, he's fine, or no, it's a huge concern. Where do you fall into those two rankings there?
Well, I don't go to no, it's a huge concern. Okay. I think stop, he's fine is a little, they're two extremes.
Yes.
I would say I feel it's less of a concern now because of the organization doing something that they probably could have done a little more of earlier, but I think they were stubborn, he was stubborn, using him more as a screener and a roller. Takes away from the onus of he can't shoot a jump shot. So if you're using him like that, he's often in a pick and roll situation. Whoever's guarding him, he's got such more size on that person. I would have said if part of that was his unwillingness to want to get fouled and go to the line, that I think is a concern. But I also think that was improving in the back half of before shutdown.
I agree. When we were talking about it a little earlier, I brought up in the Toronto series last year in the playoffs, he was like shying away from the line. I think he only shot 3 or 4 foul shots in the first 4 or 5 games of that season, of that series.
Well, he only averaged 3 a game for the entire playoffs, which was 2 less than he does, and 5 to me is such a low number, period.
Yeah.
This was last year. I was actually telling people, so Al Horford is a big target to stab at. You know, it hasn't worked out to date for him. One thing I tell everybody, go and look at Al Horford, who he has been in the playoffs. You should not be concerned about who Al Horford will be when they go to Orlando, whether they've figured out if he's coming off the bench or whatever. This guy brings his game to a different level. Shooting percentage, averaging more points, averaging more rebounds, shooting better from 3. Period. And I took only when he was 30 and on, because then somebody would say, well, that was when he was a young guy.
Yeah, right.
So Ben Simmons is the reverse. He takes less shots in the postseason. These are only 2 years. I get it. Less shots, lower percentage, less free throws, less assists. Now, the less assists could have been last year. Obviously, you're giving Jimmy Butler the ball in the fourth, and he's out of the mix. And those are key periods of the time. But if I'm a young player and I'm a Joel Embiid, I couldn't throw Joel in it because he's never been healthy playing in the postseason. But look at veterans who bring their game to a different level in the postseason. They acknowledge it. They know the game is, the level of play is different, and they bring their game to be there. Mm-hmm. That's what these two need to do.
How much will Al Horford benefit from coming off the bench? Will that be a big part of it as well?
Honestly, for me, and I said, I don't care which way you decide. Make a decision of what you want. But if you want to start where defense is your number one priority, that starting five defensively is as good as it gets.
Especially in the playoffs, right?
Yeah. So you don't have to tell me he has to come off the bench. But if you say, I need Joel and Ben, get them going offensively to start games, then you're going to go with a shake, in my opinion. Either way, I'm good with either one of those. The bigger issue is make it where Horford is with either Embiid and Simmons for the bulk of when he's playing until the final 7 minutes. And then go back to that starting five, which is defensively who you want to be.
Yeah, I do you think Brett might give this a tryout during these 8 games, whether it's, you know, Shake Milton in the starting lineup, Al Horford in the starting lineup, shake up the rotations, use everybody, or do you think you go in with a set plan and ride it?
He's going to decide before the 8. He wants it decided before the 8.
Yeah.
And for me, again, if you look at the Detroit game, and I don't have the, I should have put my numbers in front of me, but I'm going to tell you that Horford and Embiid play together. Simmons is out because of the back. Both of them, I think Al was 8 of 11 from the floor, and I know that Embiid had 20 and 14, I think, rebounds. The problem is not Embiid and Horford together. The problem is Embiid, Simmons, Horford together because they clog an area. And I don't know if you'd agree with me, Bob. Another way you could get around that is call more plays so that it's definitive. I got the low box on this possession.
Yeah.
And they don't like to do this. They like everything to come out organically, which I get, except for if you have 3 guys who want the same area, then you have to call it.
Oh, yeah. No, Bob has been taking up that cause for a while now.
Yeah.
He's with you, D. Yeah, absolutely.
I often said, like, when they first got Al Horford, I saw a high-low game between the two of them, Horford and Embiid, because Horford's smart enough that he knows how to feed him. Getting Ben Simmons to a weak side when the ball's on one side, and maybe even running a little something where he's coming off of a weak side pick and coming in a full pick. Like you said, if he's going to be matched up against anybody, he's always in an advantage. You can't stop him with the ball going to the basket. Who the hell's going to stop him on a full sprint on the weak side going to the basket? And Al Horford can pass the ball. Joel Embiid can if he just listens a little bit. But they don't use Ben Simmons properly off the ball as much as they should, I don't think. And Brett has a lot of schematic stuff that I think he really needs to work with in the half-court offense.
And if you're going to have those 3 on the court, but I think they really are going to try to avoid that for any length of time, that I would just say, for me, I'd want to close games out with that 5.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and that's generally what they did, especially, I believe, in the Clippers game when they first
brought the 2 games that you look at, the Clippers, they want to play that game all the time because everybody's statistics were perfect for that, right? And it's against a high-level opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Detroit game, because at that point you had said Horford and Embiid can't play together. The 2 of them are in there. They both have great games. voila.
Combined for 50. Yeah, 50 points that game.
Yes. Getting back to your point, Al Horford playing better in the postseason, I take that and run with it. I actually think that Brett Brown may consider keeping Al Horford in the starting lineup just because he's a veteran. And my problem with the Sixers this year, I always go back to not surrounding this team and Ben and Joe with shooters, is the fact that we depend on our young talent that we're still developing. We start to depend on the Quirk Mazes and the Shake Miltons, even though they have spurts of excellence. Al Horford, though, a veteran. And that might be what Brett Brown wants going into this unknown scenario where even guys like Matisse Thybulle says, like, I don't really know what to prepare for. So maybe he does start him and does not have Al come off the bench. But I will agree that I think separating Al and Ben after the starting couple minutes and the closing of games might be the way to go.
Yeah, for me, again, I'll just go back to you're making a choice of what is most important out of the gate, defense or getting your guys going offensively. But I also think that the teams that have the go-to six man, like Lou Williams is a no-brainer, mm-hmm. right? A momentum guy, a momentum changer. Right. If you're in a lull, you go to Lou, all of a sudden, you know, something's going to be different. So what do you in making the decision? Do you want to start strong defensively or offensively? Maybe the second part of that decision is what gives you more bang for the buck coming off the bench as your first substitution.
Right.
Horford going to the five, substituting for Embiid, or Shake coming in for Embiid, sliding Al, making Ben more of a roller. What gives you more bang for the buck in your first substitution?
See, I wasn't on the free Shake bandwagon that so many people started chanting and all that stuff, but now I am. Now I'm all about starting out to get that offense because I know the defense is going to be there. Like,
right.
Defense on this team for me is never a question. When it comes to the offensive output, though, and maybe that log jam that we saw earlier in the season, if Shake can come in and alleviate that right from the get-go to start off this playoff series or start off these eight games, I'm all on board for that. I'm going offense.
And they're at their best when the ball's moving. We all know that. And the dump down and everybody standing around, four guys standing around, or you run off of Joel Embiid, which I've said a thousand times I think is ridiculous. The ball's so much better when it's moving. Who lends to better ball movement, a Shake Milton or an Al Horford? You know,
no,
it's obvious.
No, Al is a good assistant.
Very good, absolutely.
Really?
I don't know if you heard this, but I was saying his last three games before the break, and you mentioned the circumstances surrounding it, he was 20 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists. Like, that's Al Horford. You know, people forget that, but that's Al Horford. That's what he is, and that's what he did in Boston. It's gotten jammed up here in Philadelphia, but and him saying now that this break, he's even more healthy, there's something really good to be gotten there. He can't be a 12 to 15 minute a night guy just substituting for Joel Embiid.
I will say, I think that to Crystal's point about youth, it does concern Brett. And I get it, but unfortunately, so you're starting five, whether you want to say he's coming off the bench at Horford or not, and Shake, those guys are in the rotation. He now has to figure out the rest of his rotation, and I think part of what concerns Brett is that his veteran, Mike Scott, would fall into this. I mean, Mike had a really tough start to his season. You know, he's shooting like 33% until the final 19 games. He got it up over 40 for those 19, mm-hmm, not
right.
for the season.
Right.
But he was so critical for them last year in the postseason, and he's a veteran. You know, Alec Burks is a veteran, but is Alec the guy? No. Shake is a better fit for what you're looking for, but he has 52 NBA games under his belt total, and he's 23 years old.
Right. D. Lineham in studio with us here on the 7-6 day, celebrating all things 76ers. The other thing we got into, the other cliche question, if you will,
yes.
when it comes to Ben Simmons, and the jump shot was the first one. The second one is that Joel Embiid fella and his conditioning. Do we make too much of his conditioning issue, or we don't make enough of it?
Well, you make enough of it, but not too much.
Yeah, right. So it is a concern.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, here's the concern. He has never come off of any layoff for injury, sickness, whatever you want to say, where his conditioning hasn't been an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on him. That's not on us. We got to witness it. That's
right.
All.
Exactly. Now we've batted that around a bit. Now, the one we haven't touched on yet, really, other than we first introduced it or in the 6 o'clock hour today, is probably the biggest possible question. And it's the one that matters the most. Are you confident that the process will bear a championship. Are you confident? I say yay, it will bear a championship.
At some point?
Let's say within like the next like three years. Yeah.
I was going to say it has
not this year.
So those two guys, one is 25 plus, right? Embiid's going to be 26.
Embiid just turned 26.
Okay,
yeah.
So he just had a birthday.
Right. Ben Simmons turns 24 in a couple weeks.
Right, so I'm going to say that I would agree with you. In their time of the two of them together, if you, as a front office and an organization, go in the right direction, that they, by the time they are 28, 29, should have a championship.
People love mentioning
people don't want to wait, Dave. People don't want to wait. But you're right.
People said it with Jordan. No, but Jordan didn't win until he was, what, 28?
Yes, like you're that. Right.
So people want to look at the Sixers with Joel Embiid and now Ben Simmons in the same way.
Some youth have won earlier, right?
Yeah, but we don't like acknowledging right. that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go with you guys also because of another factor. There's not a dominant team in this league right now.
Well,
like I know Milwaukee's good and Giannis is out of this world good. I don't look at them as a dynasty right now. I really don't. And if you're going to take talent versus talent, I think I'd take the Sixers over. Now, does Milwaukee play a better game and maybe, you know, have a better cohesion because of maybe Mike Budenholzer knows how to mesh them a little bit better than Brett has meshed the Sixers? Maybe. But I don't see a team. You know, LeBron James is 35 years old, whatever. I don't see a team that's out there that's going to be a dominant, no doubt about it, this is who you have to go through. So I think they're going to get a championship in the next few years.
Three for three, Crystal? Now, will the process bear a championship?
Now, the long term is yes, but and this may sound frivolous, but we have to remember processing is a sin. And sins come at a cost and at a high cost. And last year, we paid part of that cost with a quadruple doink, right? So, but we don't know what the sports guys are thinking. Was that enough? Was that enough punishment for the sins of the process?
God, I hope so.
Do we need more punishment? And I think that it falls down to that. Like, are the sports gods satisfied with the punishment that they gave us last year? And if we don't come back and do certain things that we thought were going to happen this year, like Ben Simmons shooting more, Joel Embiid staying in condition, then they might not look favorably upon us.
Well, I will
long term, yes, but when they get older, although we don't like to wait.
I will say this, and we alluded to this earlier in the show, Dean, I don't even know if you're aware of this. My dad doesn't like saying that I was named after Mark Iveroni. But he likes my name was inspired by Mark Iveroni. That's a fact, okay? That's how long we've been suffering since Mark Iveroni first came to this team, and I was born shortly thereafter.
So is enough enough? Or like how much more? But for it to be enough, though, you have to do all the things that make you seem like you want this curse to be gone, right?
Yeah.
Like, but we haven't done all the things yet. Hopefully we'll see something different come time in the Orlando bubble, but like, I don't think, like, obviously, it's not just a Joel Embiid thing. This is an all-player thing when we talk about conditioning after having months off. Ben Simmons isn't magically just going to develop a jumper or even be willing to take them. I wouldn't be surprised. I would be surprised if he took more this year.
What you're making it sound like...
pay for sins.
It's like a basketball festivus. We need, like, different feats we have to accomplish before we actually can win a championship. I still think they do win. I know we all talk about right now these younger guys, right? Now, I hated that argument even going into the season because I didn't want that younger guys argument or inexperienced guys argument. Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid have been in the league for at least two more years than they've been playing, like Joel and Ben for the one more year when he had the foot injury. They're still pros. They've been around the game. And I understand that that's not going to lend itself always to what he should be doing on the basketball court or what they should be doing on the basketball court, but they should have enough experience under their belt now where they know that they got to develop that jump shot, or they know they have to be in shape when a season comes around.
Knowing versus doing.
Yeah, exactly, but they should know that. The fact that they're not doing it really pisses me off sometimes.
I don't think either of them ever come into camp out of shape. I think the conditioning that we usually talk about with Joel comes from injury.
Okay.
Coming off injury.
Okay.
I have never seen him come to camp where he's looked fat.
Never looked. That's funny. I was going to bring this up to you.
I'm with you.
I don't think you and I have ever, through the years that we were covering the team, saw him and said, oh, he looks fat. He doesn't look fat. He doesn't look out of shape. But he's not always in great basketball shape.
Start of this year, he didn't look like he had his wheels under him.
And I will say he gets thick, lower body thickness.
Me too.
What? Sorry. I mean, we all
in the butt.
Yeah. Right.
D, I would love to get your take on this because we're talking about a championship and will the process yield a championship? And I really think that there is this window that we have. And these guys are so young, right? And Ben Simmons can have a 20-year career. Yes, we may be talking about the jumper, hopefully not too much longer, but we can always find things to talk about with Ben Simmons. But I think he is destined to have a much longer career. I don't want this to be the case, but I feel like Joel Embiid has such a shorter window of time where he just turned 26 during the quarantine. So now he's entering into his mid to late 20s. And it feels like we have to do it, maybe not this season, but sooner rather than later if we want a championship from the process with specifically these two players.
I would say maybe not so much for me before injury gets to be too much of an issue, but before they hit free agency.
Right.
Yeah. Because I look around the league and tell me the longest tenured person with the team. You know, right. When you get that free agency now and you have not, even if you have won a championship, people go places with somebody they want to play with
right.
because they have the ability to do it. So that would be a fear more so for me. I will say, and rest his soul, I loved Moses Malone, but I did get to interview him once late. So Joel's probably in his third year. So he missed those first two. He is back playing. And I remember asking Moses, just for a big man, tell me, is this just part of the gig? Because of your size and the impact of what you want to do physically on a court. And he really did say, I don't think people understand who aren't our size, what your how much injury is so much more a factor.
Right. And I do want to just make one thing clear. I never thought Joel Embiid was fat. His, like, the fat for me is like, he's got 6-pack abs instead of 8-pack abs. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, no. And when
Ben's never out of shape.
And when you hear what he eats, that's part of it.
Right,
I mean,
right,
you know,
yeah.
Chick-fil-A, milkshakes, Shirley Temples.
All delicious.
Yeah, all delicious.
I think the biggest thing was Shake Shack after.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And that was playoffs last
playoffs,
year
yeah.
during the Nets.
Not
series.
A good look. Not a good look.
But in
look
fairness,
yes.
I mean, Iverson ate whatever he wanted for his entire career. But he looked like this diminutive, you know, little big man.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll be joined by Hall of Famer
Bobby Jones,
joining us at 9:30 today. That's when we return here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
'97.5 The Fanatic.
Bobby Jones, ladies and gentlemen. I can't wait to catch up with Bobby Jones. He had one of the best lines. Like, I always like going back watching people's Hall of Fame speeches. He had one of the best lines because he had Dr. J and Charles Barkley up there with him. And he said, I just want to really thank Julius and Charles for coming off the bench for me tonight.
Oh, that is cool.
Ah, this guy. Ah. This guy, Bobby Jones. We'll be joined by him in just a couple of minutes. But also, don't forget, what are we doing this till about noon today? We have people giving away T-shirts in our parking lot. Crystal, you were there. Thank you for hurdling the chair. Or, sorry, the table.
Oh, you saw the video.
I saw the video.
I did that for you, Mark.
You're just the best. I was like, well, she's wearing jeans. There's no way she's going to do it. And there you pulled it off. Thank you very much.
I try.
There you go. So we're giving away the T-shirts out there with our Fanatic Promotions crew. They're out there in the parking lot of One Bala Plaza in the West Lobby. You can't miss it. Big red tent. It's like our own circus going on for the Sixers out there, throwing out T-shirts. The Philly T-shirts.
We are a circus.
The Philly T-shirts, right? Those are the T-shirts you're giving away, Crystal?
Yeah, they have red ones, white ones, large ones, extra large ones.
So many ones. So a lot of them. We're just giving them away out there. So there we go. Did you see it when you were on your way in there, D? Did you see the t-shirts?
I did. No, I didn't see the t-shirts. I saw the tent.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Because we're going to have to get
drive by real slow when we're leaving.
And
they'll throw
somebody,
you one.
I know. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
I'm ready to catch it. Well, I'll drive with one hand.
There you go.
There you go. Do we have a winner? I hope we had a winner there for the
Ben Simmons mini ball.
I'm sure we did.
Pat's getting some. I think he's on the line. Pat's working his ass off today.
Sorry, guys. I'm calling a Hall of Famer.
Oh, Miss Cousy.
From one Hall of Famer to another, right, Pat? Attaboy.
This gives me time to ask Dee if she watched Eurovision yet. Did you watch Eurovision on Netflix? Bob made it through 18 minutes and like 40 seconds.
Dee, don't. I didn't watch it either.
I'm exact.
So bad. I will say I have watched a ton of documentaries this summer. Have you not all just
been? Oh, this is not a documentary.
No.
This is a Will Ferrell.
Real bad movie, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think you know that I don't like movies.
Yes. Yeah.
Movies and belts. Dee, I don't like movies.
Dee, best doc in this quarantine.
It's going to be one that people will find. Basketball, it's in the water. Basketball County. It's in the water. It's great.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. It's so good. It was done by Kevin Durant's 35 tenure, I think is the name of the production company. It's him and his guy have that production company, but it's all about Prince George's County and the basketball talent that has come out of there. Kevin Durant is one of them. Mm-hmm. Len Bias was from there. Markel Fultz is from there. Oladipo is from there. So there's the number of NBA is about 25 of them, but then the number of NCAA high level players is equal. But it also takes you through the history of how people got to Prince George's County, which came from riots that took place in Washington, D.C., that pushed them out. And people ended up in Prince George's County. And it also goes through in the 80s how those kids that were growing up there are having to deal with a lot of drug issues. It's fascinating.
I will keep my eyes open for that one. I do want to give a shout out to Austin and Willingboro, who won the Simmons mini basketball. So not too bad right there. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we got to go to a Hall of Famer. We got to go to the first ever Sixth Man of the Year award winner. We got to go to the man that has inspired so many. Also, a guy that Charles Barkley said this about him. He said, if the world was made up of Bobby Joneses, we'd be in a much better place. There'd be no problems. That's a quote from Charles Barkley on our next guest, Bobby Jones, joining us right now. Bobby Jones, how are you? Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you. Thank you.
It's our honor to have you on with us. First and foremost, what are you up to these days?
Well, just taking care of my family and myself, just trying to stay healthy, and got 8 grandkids, so doing a lot of activities with them.
That's awesome. Now, I want to fast forward to before we talk about some of the playing days you got to experience. There was a story that I just couldn't get enough of, and Joel Embiid called you to wear the number 24 in honor of Kobe Bryant. But obviously, that's your number. That's Bobby Jones's number. What was that conversation like?
He was a really nice guy, very, very humble, just was very considerate about, not wanting to offend me or to just ask my permission. And, I said that was fine. Kobe was a great player. I played with his dad with the Sixers. There's a great connection there.
And you told, from according to Joel Embiid, you had told him he just better play good defense.
I did. Yes, I did tell him that. And he can do that. Yes.
Now, another interesting tie-in from when you were playing to today was that you had an interesting career in that you made an All-Star 3 times, All-Star team 3 times when you were with the Denver Nuggets. Then you got traded, and you came to the Sixers, and you made another All-Star team, and they're like, "That's great. Now you're going to come off the bench for us." Like, how did you wrap your mind around first being traded after being a 3-time All-Star and then making another All-Star team and then coming off the bench for that team?
Well, the year that I made the All-Star team with the Sixers, I was coming off the bench. So I was voted onto the team by the coaches as a non-starter for the All-Star game. But that was one of my greatest honors, I felt like, because I was only the second player to not start for his team. Besides Paul Silas and the Celtics in the 60s to make an All-Star team. So it was a great honor. I love coming off the bench. You get a chance to study your opponent, see what they're doing. The intensity level for me could go up because I know my minutes are not going to be, I'm not going to be dragging on for 48 minutes. I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be in and out. I'm going to be doing what I can energetically to pump my team up on both ends of the floor. So, you know, it suited me really well. I'm not a one-on-one player. I like the fast break. I like to run. I like to get back on defense. And those things take energy. So that was good for me.
Speaking with Bobby Jones, this Sixers team is going to go through a transition here after the layoff when they start up in Orlando again. There's 8 games, then the playoffs. And a guy like Al Horford, just to use him as an example, might have to change to be more of a bench player than he thought he was signing on to this team to be. What would you tell a player, any player, that might not be playing the game the way they think they should, but playing in a way that would benefit the team the most?
Well, I would just say, you know, put your ego aside and just understand that you sign a contract to play for a team, not to play for yourself. And you're really looking to have the team success to be in the forefront of what you do. And I learned that in North Carolina under Dean Smith. And, you know, he had a little sign in the locker room that you walk by every day, united we stand, divided we fall. And, you know, he taught that, you know, whatever you can do to help the team, you do it. And, you know, a guy like Al Horford, who to me is a great player, just a true professional in every sense, I don't think he'll have any problem if that's the case for him to do that.
Bobby, a lot of our listeners for the first time got a look at what basketball was like back in the 80s when the Jordan documentary came out recently. And we've had a lot of discussions here on the show with our listeners. What kind of basketball do you like better? The one played back in the 80s, the physical type that you went through in the NBA, or the one now that's so three-point dominant? Do you see the big difference, and do you like the game maybe more or less than the way it's played now?
Well, you know, it is very different. I can't say that I like it better. I enjoyed the way we played. I like, you know, the contact. You've got to have contact. I think the intensity level is better when guys aren't just pulling up from 35 feet and there's no contact. There's really no effort to get a shot off. I mean, what amazes me about players today is that, you know, anybody can play 15 years because you're just walking the ball up the court and you're not rubbing off picks, you're not getting hurt, you're not getting bumped. And so, you know, I do prefer the old style where there is, it's a little bit more, I'd say, intense.
Bobby, could that old style win today? Because if there's a team in the NBA built to play that old style, it's the current 76ers.
Yes, I think it can win. I think officiating has a part to do with that, but I think I remember the old Celtics when we would play them. Their philosophy seemed to always be, well, let us get in about 10 fouls in the first quarter, and then the referees won't call anything else after that, and that sort of was the case. So once you establish how you're going to play, a referee's not going to call 35-40 fouls. All the time, so they're going to start letting some things go, and when that happens, a physicality type of game can be more dominant.
Bobby, this is D-Line. I'm nice to hear you, and I'm glad your family's healthy and doing well. I'm curious, because when we were watching and you talk about setting a tone with those fouls, I often feel like because that isn't how the game is played, these guys can't play that way. You talked about even setting picks. I don't think people even hold their screens and picks. Like, does it go back to even maybe young age coaching if, in fact, you did want to play more of a toughness style of basketball?
Well, Dave, that is true. You do have to learn that early. You have to have a system in place. And you know, we're getting a lot of guys from Europe who are good players, but they're most of them are really, really good shooters, defensive wise, setting picks, those kind of things. Not many people do that, and it is something that needs to be taken seriously, I think, for this game to succeed, in coming years.
Speaking with Bobby Jones, what could you imagine playing in this startup after a layoff like this? I know you said you're trying to stay healthy and hang with the family and all that. What would it take for you to get back on a court in a pandemic right now if you were playing today?
Well, you know, that's a tough call. I think it is a tough situation for these guys. you know, they got family concerns. You know, you hear so many things about COVID that, you know, what's true, what's not. You know, the mortality rate is dropping, but, you know, for some people, you know, there's still fatalities. And there's long-term effects in some people it doesn't bother them at all. So, and I think there's a real caution that has to take place, before I would go out there to think about, you know, contacting somebody and playing the kind of game we play. If you're not guarding, but if you're 5 feet from everybody, then it's okay. But, that's not the way we played back then.
Bobby, this is Crystal Ridge from NBC Sports Philadelphia Today, filling in on 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm just interested in bridging the gap between the young children and teenagers and young adults who were learning about 80s basketball through the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary to present day. And with the seeding, if, you know, when the Sixers go into the playoffs, my hope is that they actually play Boston in the first round opposed to a Miami. And I just kind of want you to speak about your take on Boston to this day. It was obviously a rivalry now and a rivalry back then. Do you still feel a same level of passion when you watch the Sixers and they're playing the Celtics?
First of all, yes, I do. I don't like the Celtics very much. I'm not a Celtics fan. And, yeah, I think that, you know, both are very large cities, both Eastern, East Coast cities that really dominate our nation in many ways. And, you know, I think that's reflected in the sports teams and the passion that the fans have for their teams. So, you know, I would hope that they would play Boston also. I like to see them knock them off, and I think they'd match up well against them.
All right, Bobby, it's easy for anybody to ask you, of all the great players you went against, and you were so versatile defensively, who was the hardest to cover? I'm not going to ask you that. I'm going to ask you, what great player, if you're playing defense, do you want to cover and you think you're going to have success against if they're getting the last shot of the game?
That's a really, you're talking about back in my day?
Yes, back in your day.
Oh, man, I don't know. There were some really great scores back then. I don't, you know, my philosophy was always never I wanted to stop the guy, but I knew that I couldn't always stop the person. I would just want to make it difficult for them to get a tough shot. And, you know, I felt like I could do that against guys who were good mid-range shooters, like a guy like Larry Bird. He couldn't drive by me. He just wasn't quick enough, but he had that great fadeaway shot that was difficult, but I could get my long arm up there and I could bother him. So, you know, I like my chances against that situation.
Exactly the person I wanted you to say, because I grew up with you guys. That was my, you know, that was my heyday of watching basketball as a teenager, and you on Larry Bird always gave me comfort knowing you could stop him a little bit.
James Worthy would have probably been another one, right, Bobby?
Yeah, James was another one. Yeah, James had those big hands.
Yep.
He could go by. So, yeah, he was a danger. Yeah.
Bobby, what do you like from this Sixers team? I mean, obviously you have the playoffs coming up here, the 8 games and then the playoffs. What do you like about this team right now?
Well, I think, you know, Simmons, if he's healthy, you know, he can do so much as far as making his teammates better. And that's, you know, I compare him a little bit to Julius Erving back in my day. Julius was a guy that he made me better. He made everybody else better because he'd look for you. You know, he'd help you on defense. And I think Simmons does the same thing. So I'm looking for him to take a leadership role on this team and to dominate. And then also, I think Embiid also, the intensity level just needs to go up and just, you know, play through whatever pain or whatever frustrations you've got and mentally focus on one goal, and that's to defeat the team you're playing.
Bobby, just interested to get your take on Matisse Thybulle, who is obviously in his rookie year and is going through a heck of a time in a small apartment, but he is a pretty good defensive player. He's a deflection machine. What are your thoughts on him as being someone so great on defense?
I like him a lot. I've seen him play, and he's a disruptor, and that's when you're playing against a team and you got a guy like that who disrupts what you want to do, it really kind of throws the whole team off because you don't know where he's going to be and what he's going to do. And those kind of guys are really dangerous to not only to stop any momentum that the other team may have, but to give your team that boost that, that it really needs at some point.
Bobby, I have one quick question because we've been talking about Philadelphia wanting a championship out of going through the process. And, you know, the Sixers back in your day got there, and didn't win. And then, obviously, the addition of Moses Malone is huge, and you do win. But what is that intangible that takes a team that is talented enough to be in the finals to then actually winning the finals?
Well, I think the intangible is chemistry. We had those really good teams. The Sixers got to three finals before they finally won one. And I think it's really, you've got to get the right mix of players who not only care about each other, but care about the number one thing. And that's not their scoring average, not their rebounding average or steals. It's what can they do to win the game? And, you know, that's the Sixers challenge. They've got to find the 12 guys that they can put on a team that are coming together as one, that aren't looking just to tweet out something after a game or whatever for their own sake. They want unity in their team. And I think that for the Sixers in 83 was the biggest thing. We knew that with Moses on our team, there were no more excuses. And I think for this team now, that's the same case. There are no more excuses. You've got talent. You've got to go out and show it.
Bobby Jones, on a personal note, I thank you very much for being such a great team player and agreeing to come off the bench. If you didn't, my dad would never know the name Mark Ivoroni and then name me Mark. So I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby.
Bobby Jones joining us right there. Really appreciate him coming on with us. That's a true story, Dick. I'm not named after him, but I told you. There you go.
He said two things that really stand out for me. One, you can't get a better, higher compliment than you make your teammates better. Mm-hmm. And Dr. J did that, and he sees Ben Simmons does that. I mean, that's a huge compliment.
Oh, yeah.
And the other is, you know, you got to the finals. We all want it now. Call it for what it is. You must be willing to sacrifice a little of me for us.
Yeah.
And I know Brett tried to explain it to the best he could, but when you asked him, D, when you asked Bobby Jones about what separated that team, it was chemistry.
Yeah.
And Tobias Harris just said at the start of the year, chemistry was a huge issue with this team.
And here's my other thing about chemistry. Mm-hmm. I don't need to eat pizza with you and Bob if I'm in this chair.
100%.
All I have to do is be the best from 6 to 10 with Bob on my left and Mark on my right running the three-man weave.
I don't need you to be besties. I don't need you to go ahead and get that pizza together. Yeah. I just need you on the court when you're between those lines or on that hardwood.
I need to know that you like me in that space. Right?
Exactly.
I'm going to give you the ball where you like to come off of a screen to shoot a jumper. I need to be in sync with what makes you good and vice versa.
It's funny. Imitation of basketball players has been going on forever, and it'll continue to always go on, whether it be a stylistic thing, a Harden, pullback jumper or something like that. I was playing high school basketball when Bobby Jones and those Sixers were doing that. Bobby Jones did something that got so imitated when I was playing, and I did it also, was when somebody threw you a good pass and you made a shot, you pointed to him. Good job. And I'm not kidding you. Bobby Jones brought that to the NBA back in that day because he was such a nice guy, such a good guy. Whenever he would score off of a pass, he'd turn and point, Doc, Mo, and he'd point to the guy like ever so slightly, but just let him know, great pass, good job. And I swear to God, it took off like wildfire when I was playing high school ball and guys would get good passes. Everybody just started pointing at each other. It was pretty neat.
It's a perfect time for that to come back because you shouldn't be high-fiving. You shouldn't be fist-bumping.
Yeah, all right.
So just,
little point.
Just give the point from social distance. I'm acknowledging.
See how ahead of his time he was?
Nice assist.
Well, I failed to bring it up, but like back in 1982, he was like, hey, guys, this is every pandemic in the year 2020. It'll be just pointing. That way everybody's safe.
It's no great
problem.
Acknowledgement.
And really, that is the ultimate team guy, and there really is no better compliment than there should be more of you. And that's what Charles Barkley said about him. There'd be no problems if there was more Bobby Joneses in the world.
And he didn't just mean on the court.
No.
Oh, I don't doubt
you
that.
You know what I mean? He's a great, great guy.
I mean, he's down in North Carolina in the Charlotte area, so when we would go down there when the Sixers played, now the Hornets, Bobcats, whatever they were.
Right, yeah.
But he's such a genuine good person and does a lot of good things. He coaches, teaches young people. He when you say do the right things, he's the do the right thing kind of guy.
I think all you need to know is if you didn't grow up watching him, you hear how flattered he was. This is a Hall of Famer, but how flattered he was that just Joel Embiid thought to call him to say, hey, on Kobe Bryant night, can I wear your number 24? And he's like, yeah, I just plays in the defense. Yeah. And he was just so flattered that a guy would actually call him to show him that respect. And it's like, of course he would. You're Bobby Jones. what a great, Bob, thanks for lining that up, man. That was a lot of fun to talk to him. We do have one more giveaway today, for at least for the morning show, that is. And we'll go back to being the seventh caller for this great prize.
You're flip-flopping. Seven. I got
just
you.
Like that.
We're with you.
The massive creative mind I have. we have another autographed item. We gave away a Ben Simmons autographed ball, a Tobias Harris autographed ball. Now we're giving away a Joel Embiid signed blue authentic jersey. How about that?
What?
That's what we're giving away, ladies and gentlemen. All you got to do is be the seventh caller now to 215-263-0975. That's 215-263-0975. I know we're going to be talking plenty of 76ers tomorrow as well, but to do a full dedicated basketball show today with our guests, Devon Givens, Aaron McKee, D. Lynam coming in studio, and just there, Bobby Jones. What a fun day. What a fun day. Did you have fun
it
coming
flew.
In?
I had a blast.
See that, Crystal, you have fun. You got your Sixers shirt on as well.
I always have fun.
Not like that Pat Egan with the Philly shirt and all that stuff. By the way,
I was this close to not following Pat Egan on Twitter. His bio says that Beyonce is overrated.
Yeah, she is.
What?
And I would just like say that she literally changed the world when she had a digital visual album drop with zero promotion, zero singles. Mm-hmm. I'm far removed from the Beehive, but you have to respect greatness. I followed him because he said something good about cheesesteaks.
She just doesn't hold a candle to Destiny's Child. That's all. She shouldn't have left. They made better music.
Kelly Rowland or tomorrow's Twitter poll. Kelly Rowland or Beyonce?
I prefer Michelle Williams.
Who you got?
The forgotten Destiny's Child.
Oh, that's right. She was the other kid by Destiny. I forgot about that. Let's run through some Twitter polls here, all brought to you by Window Nation. Call 1-866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. Pat Egan, what's it look like here on all our fine Twitter polls today? How do the people rule?
So if you head on over to our Twitter account at 975mornings, you can find our Twitter polls. How much of a concern is Ben Simmons' jump shot status? Stop, he's fine. Huge one, 58% of the vote.
There you
42%
go.
Say stop, he's fine.
We call that 8% a vast majority.
Second poll, do we make too much of Joel Embiid's conditioning? Yes or no? No, 71% of the vote.
Pretty appropriate. D, you're right on the money with that one.
And then third poll, are you confident the process will bear a championship? No, unfortunately. 60% of the vote.
Wow.
All three of those polls, though, are also on the Instagram account at 975TheFanatic. So you never know. They might have had different, results there.
Pat, you all about that Graham. That's what you're about, my friend.
Oh, I Graham hard.
you Graham extra hard, my friend. Let's roll in here with some of our Twitter. Oh, by the way. 7-6 day continues throughout the day today, so be sure to enjoy some fine Sixers conversation. Crystal Rush, go to you first. What is your takeaway of the day?
Oh, man, I forgot about the takeaway of the day.
I forgot about the takeaway of the day.
Had one, that Egan's an idiot.
No, that's a good
and we all agree.
That's a great one, Crystal.
Yeah.
I don't agree.
Thanks,
the
Dave.
Pride of Doherty. Come
Thanks.
On now.
Are you going to say
I think my takeaway is just D. Lynam coming in, talking hoops, and talking about Al Horford, and that he will be hopefully better in the playoffs, because that's what everyone literally is hoping for.
That's
so, amen, D.
That's a good one.
You.
I thought you were going to go with don't use the oven when you're barbecuing, but
that's good. I could have been petty and went with you didn't even know what a hurdler profession was.
Well,
like,
I knew it was a profession.
It's an Olympic
I know it is, but no one's like, I want to be a professional hurdler and make that money. Like,
I mean, Lolo Jones said it. She's making that money.
Okay, name another.
That's
my point.
Jesse Owens. 1936 Olympian. You ever heard of him?
Yes.
Hello. Thanks for having my back.
Do you even
back.
Watch sports?
Thanks for having my
Do
back.
Do you even know sport? Do you even know hurdles? Anyway, Pat Egan, take it away today.
The bonding that me and Bob had over the weekend watching Hamilton separately but kind of together as we texted back and forth is thrown out the window when he showed up and just started speaking badly about my name.
That's true right there.
It's so easy, though.
Oh, no, it is.
Yeah.
It is, but
okay.
Still, I thought we had something and we don't.
Dee, can we go to you next for a fine takeaway of the day?
Absolutely, yeah, of course. I think my takeaway of the day, one, getting up in the morning isn't so bad early.
Sure.
And it wasn't that early, quite frankly. But my other, anytime that I can have a conversation with people like you guys and Bobby Jones about basketball, I mean, that's a great day.
I'm honored just to be incorporated with that. Thank you. Oh, yeah. No, it's great seeing you, D, as always. Bob Cooney?
Believe it or not, the nicest man in the world, Bobby Jones, just talked smack on our show for Bobby Jones. He said, Larry Bird couldn't get by me.
That's
yeah,
a fine point.
That was S talking right there for Bobby Jones.
Okay. All right. I love Aaron McKee. I love Bobby Jones. I love Devon Givens. I love D Lina. But my takeaway of the day is my own greatness and that I called how long you would watch. Eurovision.
Within 8 seconds.
Darn, we forgot about the elves.
That's right. Did we mention the elves? We forgot about him
not liking the elves who are.
I wasn't elf shaming. I work with Egan.
I think if anything's proven, you do elf shame because you can't stand me.
Probably.
That's nothing to do with it. I can't stand you because of other reasons. Your height has nothing to do with it.
I'll be gone by December. Don't worry.
That's probably not that part, but just the why you don't like elves is Egan. Anyway, my thanks again to Devon, to D, to Aaron McKee, and also to the great Bobby Jones as well. And Crystal, great seeing you again. Also, stay tuned for the Anthony Gargano show here on 97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.